That's fucking mad, Keith. Like, that's, I can't even explain. How would he know that? Like, seriously.
I was genuinely inside your head.
How can he do that? Like, how can he do loads of shit?
I got a guy to think he was a sleeper agent under hypnosis, and he went in and he poisoned somebody. Now, everybody in the coffee shop that we'd set up, they're all actors.
Right.
They were all in on it. But this guy thought he was going to do a real coffee shop with real people, and the whole idea was he had to get back a briefcase full of documents that were like high-risk documents to the government over there.
Keith Barry, you're very welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, lads. Keith. It's been a while.
It really has been. Like, what do you call yourself now, Keith? A magician, a mentalist, an illusionist?
So look, it's hard.
The whole shebang.
You know me a long time. Eric, believe it or not, a long time ago. Supported me. And obviously, it's great to see you going on and doing your own thing. But I remember those days. But, you know, I suppose I've done magic and escapology and all the rest, but the work that I'm doing today is mainly with the brain. So Brain Hacker encompasses it all. But I'm still not shy to embrace my magic background and all the rest of it. But like, I do hypnosis, escapology, but Brain Hacker is kind of the term that people are used to now. You know?
And the latest show is called...
Mind Games.
Yeah. Now, when I went onto your website, Keith, and I understand for a good reason, there isn't too much of a description of the show.
No.
Because you have to be there to experience it. And I've been at your shows before. So I opened for you in the Olympia a couple of times. Was an amazing experience. But you can't just write down what Keith's going to do because it could be anything. You know what I mean?
Well, the people are my props.
Yeah.
So every night the show's different, right? Because I could have like somebody in their 40s come up on stage, but the next night I could have somebody in their 70s come up on stage. It's a very different dynamic then, as you guys know, as entertainers, right? And for me, the more I've gone on from the days that you and I used to work together, right? I used to use a lot of props on stage and I've kind of stripped all that back now. So for me, when I say the people are my props, I like to bring up sometimes 20 people on stage at one time during Mind Games. So they become, in essence, the props, and I get inside their heads and delve inside. And the reason I wanted to keep Mind Games not completely a secret, but like, I just think there's no mystery in anything anymore.
Yeah.
Everyone's doing a podcast, right? Not in a bad way, but everyone's doing a podcast.
They are.
Years before, I might be doing a podcast by the end of the summer, by the way. But here's the thing, right? In the mystery arts, which is what I'm in, that the mystery's kind of gone out of it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you got David Blaine, Dynamo, like whoever you want to call it.
Right? Darren Brown.
Yeah, but they're all up on social media. Their lives are there. So the mystery's gone a bit. And, you know, everybody goes to the show with a phone. So for me, I just say two things. I say, listen, Mind Games is all about mystery again, injecting the mystery back in. That's why I don't give out any details of the show. Not too many details, a little bit. And then the second thing is, look, I'm not one of these people who tells the audience, put your phone in a bag at the door, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm like, listen, just put your phone aside for the next... whatever.
Enjoy yourself. Be present.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's the essence of Mind Games. But it is just about delving inside the inner recesses of people's minds and plucking out thoughts and stuff.
That's like just mad, isn't it? Like, some people are skeptical about all that stuff. I mean, I remember like the whole, even hypnotism.
Yeah.
I'm working for Joe.ie for whatever long, 9, 10 years or whatever it is now at this stage. And one of the things I did a few years ago, we did a video of me trying to quit smoking.
Yeah.
And I visited a hypnotist.
Oh, yeah.
And he hypnotised me. Now,
didn't do a good job.
No, hang on a second. I was off them for at least 3 days. But,
3 days.
But I remember the hypnotism. And what I always remember, Keith, is that I think as a participant in something like that, you have to allow yourself.
Oh, yeah.
You can't fight it. You just have to allow yourself go into it. You know? So you're like, this is going to happen. I'm going to listen to every single word he tells me. And I have to say, the trance or whatever I was in was deeply peaceful. It was lovely.
Yeah.
Now, he painted this kind of dark picture for me, which was supposed to turn me off smoking. He says, now I want you to walk. I was out on the beach, right? He taught me. I was on a beach, beautiful beach. And then there was a door and he opened the door, walked through a corridor and it turned out it was a hospital. And then looked to the left. And in the ward is me on a bed with all these wires attached to me.
Yeah.
And my family all around me praying and crying and all. And it was so real.
Yeah.
And then I woke up going, another thing. He says, and then somebody was there, and there was a noise outside the window. I looked out the window, and there was two grave diggers digging me grave with my name on the headstone. And I was like, Jesus.
And then
I was out for 3 days.
Bought a pack of cigarettes and started smoking again.
Was that the hospital right beside Glasnevin Cemetery?
So I think the participant has to be willing to let themselves go and really kind of believe in it.
I think as well, you have to really not only let yourself go, but I think you have to want.
Yeah.
You need to really want to do what you're going into the hypnotist to do.
So you really want to be a chicken.
Well, the problem with smoking, right, is like it's a subconscious addiction, right? So people are, so that's why hypnotists in general, for the most part, can help, right? So they get inside the subconscious mind and help break that habit. But like what you said, Willa, consciously though, you have to have a real will and a want and a desire to do it. Because you have to have the discipline to listen to the hypnotist audio pretty much every day for most cases, not every case. And I did a lot of that stuff in the past. Like this, I did stop smoking seminars and all that kind of stuff. But for various reasons, I stopped doing that. Right. Well, okay. Namely Joe Duffy.
Yeah. Really?
And Camille, did you ever smoke?
But I used to be one of these people a long time ago now that, you know, I wouldn't even think of a cigarette like Sunday to Thursday or Friday. But then if I'd have a drink on a Saturday night, I'd be out and about. But that was back in like the days where we were in our 20s going to Crystal nightclub.
When John Player Blue was a fiver.
I just don't get that. I just don't get why people smoke when they drink. I stopped that long time ago. Well, probably because I don't drink anymore.
Yeah.
And obviously I don't smoke anymore. Mm-hmm. But I just... When I look at that, I'm kind of going, "What? Like, why would you smoke when you bleed and drink?" Like,
well, as an ex-smoker, when you're drinking, there's nothing better, I think, than the liquid, the cold liquid, to have a nice dry, smoky sensation down your throat. It's just that.
Well, I think there'd be nothing better than another drink when I'm drinking. Maybe that's because I'm recovering. Trying to light up a blade and point at Guinness.
But I remember last time I actually helped somebody stop smoking. It was in my local pub and I was at a party. I was just a guest at a party. And this guy kept saying, "I know you've done that smoking. I really want to give up." And I was like, "I'm just at a party. It's like, you know, I'm not working right now." And he kept badgering me. And I was like, the only way to get this guy off my case is to either leave the party or actually just do it right now. So, like... hypnosis is a very complex area, right? And we can go into it heavy if you want. It's your choice, your podcast. But I've done, I'd say more TV hypnosis than any other current hypnotist worldwide.
Because
I've done so much on television, right? And then behind the scenes, I've done a lot as well. But the last time I was with this guy and I did what's called an instant induction hypnotic mechanism on him, which is basically whereby within about 10 seconds, because he kept going on at me. So I said, okay, I just went behind him, so it's an actual mechanism where I went behind him and I knocked him out using hypnosis, and within 10 seconds he was on the flat of his back in the middle of the pub, right?
Joke.
And then I was down talking to him and
security,
and I have a very specific style of language that I use to get somebody over their smoking, and I did that for 60 seconds and I said, I know you're a permanent non-smoker, right? And then he got up and in front of everybody he just took out his box of, I think it was Benson Hedges, I think it was, and he put him down the ground, he just stamped on him and everybody was laughing thinking he was only doing it for effect though.
And then
he noticed like he hadn't gone out for a cigarette in like 45 minutes. So anyway, to cut to the chase, I'm going to say I never thought any more of it, except he got off me back. He stopped talking to me for the rest of the night. And I gave him a bit of a fright by putting him out. And then about 2.5 months later, a bottle of whiskey turned up my doorstep with a note to say, "Thanks a million, I've been off the cigarettes." And then a friend who was at that party, who he was the friend of, has told me, like, you know, just, I don't know, about 6 months ago, said he's been off him 8 years or something now.
Jesus.
You know what I mean?
Wow.
So it actually worked in that particular instance.
And as you say, like, when I spoke about the people wanting to do him, Will, I touched on it as well. You said two things and then we interrupted you. What was the two things you were going to say? Two things about that.
Oh, yeah. So with hypnosis, right, it's a real complex area. Like, I used to do a lot of stage hypnosis, and that's very different than the kind of clinical hypnosis. With stage hypnosis, I'm going to tell you something that, A, I haven't really told many people, but B, most hypnotists don't want you to know, right? So in a stage environment, right, and even if I do it in the future, this is a true statement of what I'm going to say. If I get 100 people, so generally speaking, I'll give everybody a hypnotic test to find out who's suggestible,
right,
who I want up on the stage. Let's just say, we keep it at 30. I get 30 people up on the stage. Now, I know I want 10 of them to be brilliant for the audience, right? So I hypnotise all 30 of those people on stage. Now, I might get rid of a few at the start, but we'll say for now it's just 30 people still, right? Now, I look at them and I'll go, okay, so 10 of those people are definitely not hypnotised, right, out of that 30. So I get rid of them. They're gone straight away. Right. I'll weed them out fast, right?
That's just true experience, Keith.
I'll have a look and I'll just know.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So they're gone straight away. Now I've got 20 and I might do one or two little routines. Now here's the interesting thing about that 20. Here's the statistics that in my head, I've done this for so long. I believe out of that kind of 20 people, a third of them really believe that they're hypnotized, but they're not hypnotized. But they're good enough for me to use them in a show, and the audience won't know. Just as an experienced hypnotist, I know, but they actually genuinely believe that they're hypnotized.
Okay.
Right? So then there's another third of them who are mildly hypnotized, but for the most part, they're still conscious, they're still aware. So they're going to just, in my head, they're just going to play along. I'll mostly get rid of them.
Right.
But then there's a third that are fully hypnotized to the extent that I believe out of that third, so imagine out of there's 10 that are fully, really properly hypnotized, right? Out of that 10, there's about one of them, maybe two of them, that I actually could get to do, and this is what hypnotists don't want you to do, no.
I could
actually get them, rob a bank, do stuff against their morals, against their values. They will do anything I want them to do. And I mean anything I want them to do. And the reason I know that is I did a full TV show called Deception with Keith Barry, and that was on Discovery Channel a couple of years ago. Never aired over here. And I did a whole show on this called Black Ops Hypnosis. And the question I was, it's just a question, is it possible to hypnotize somebody to be a sleeper agent? In other words, you know, become a sniper and kill someone.
That's
and the answer that I found out through, and it was an experiment, and Discovery Channel supported me by doing the experiment, and we were willing to show the end result regardless of what happened. That was the experiment, because it's Discovery Channel. You see, it's not like ITV or RT.
They're very stringent. It's documentary.
So they were saying, like, if you fail, Keith, we showed a failure, and I was okay with that.
Yeah.
So we went through, and at the end of it, it was really bizarre, the whole thing that I designed. But ultimately, I got a guy to think he was a sleeper agent under hypnosis, and he went in and he poisoned somebody. Now, everybody in the coffee shop that we'd set up, they're all actors.
Right.
They were all in on it. But this guy thought he was going into a real coffee shop with real people, and the whole idea was he had to get back a briefcase full of documents that were like high-risk documents to the government over there. And ultimately, he poisoned the guy, or thought he had poisoned the guy, and he came back with the documents. But then I de-hypnotized him, and we played back the footage to him of him being in the coffee shop killing somebody. And he really thought he killed someone.
So he had a
mental breakdown on the camera, like really. And Discovery edited that, not hugely, but a good bit, because they didn't show the proper breakdown. Like, the guy had a full-on meltdown, but they couldn't show the real meltdown. It was too harsh for television.
That's a major case of the fear.
Then, of course, I had to spend hours with him backstage, or, like, you know, behind the
trying
scenes.
Trying to convince him that he didn't.
No, building him back up and giving him more confidence than he ever had before. So he went off into the world a better person for the experience.
Tell you what.
But it's real.
Look, I think it's a gift that you have more so than a skill. It's something.
I don't know. Like.
Did you try this up yet?
Not to interrupt you, but I think anyone can do what I do. But it's like Anton, right? Where'd you start? I started when I was 5. I'm 47 now, so I'm at 42 years. Like,
jeez.
Do you know what I mean? And when I say 5, I got Magic Set. But then when I was 14, I got my first booklet on hypnosis. So I started hypnosis when I was 14. So that's 33 years
ago. Wow.
And I just learned. I think the performance aspect is different though, right? So I think anyone can learn it.
I think
I get the performance aspect from my father, because he was in like the tops of the towns in Waterford, and he was a singer. So he would always be like, you know, in Jesus Christ Superstar, he'd be Jesus. Joseph and his Titan, he'd be Joseph.
He was always
the lead guy.
Right?
So I think I got the performance aspect maybe from him, you know. But I think anybody can learn this stuff. But, you know, the more I look at other, and you're probably the same in the comedy world, like, people very often come to me for advice, but they don't really want the advice, right? They want the fast track.
Right.
And when I look at like BGT or AGT, it actually kind of saddens me a little bit, because what's happening there is all of those acts, like, people don't know this, but I'm not telling tales, because you can find this online if you choose to look for it. Like, in Britain's Got Talent is a good example. Like, there's a full-time magic consultant who works with the acts behind the scenes. He mainly scripts their acts for them. He mainly molds their acts, and then they go out and do their act. So what you're seeing,
it's not their own.
It's not really their own,
okay,
right? And I think there's a sadness element to that, because it's a formula that works for BGT or AGT. So when you strip that away bare, you still have a kid or an adult who potentially have a certain amount of talent, but they've gotten this massive level of success because they've entered into a formula. When the formula is taken away, now they start to struggle, and they've given this false level of hope, and that kind of saddens me.
As
opposed to learning your trade. Like, I burnt my hands on the toasters at McDonald's. I did the kids' magic from Rosslare to Roscoff and Cherbourg on the boats.
You did your apprenticeship.
And like, the last kids' show I ever did was, besides, I still do the odd kids' show for charity, believe it or not, but the last kids' show I did was actually for Jerry Ryan. he rang me out of the blue one day, and he was stuck. A magician had let him down, and he said it was in Planet Hollywood on the green there.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said, "Listen, will you come in and do it?" And I said, "Sure." And I went in, and I don't know which one of the kids it was, but Lottie told me they actually have footage. Like his dad or their dad, like Jerry, was behind. He had a camcorder. I didn't realize. So somewhere in the Ryan.
The Concord.
In the Ryan household, there's footage of me doing my last ever, because they have it. Like they said, they've seen it. So I have to remind myself to text one of them and get that, because it's the last show I ever did.
Like the tour is still going on. You've got a few dates coming up and
I've just got six shows left now, and then that's it. Mind Games, I always bury a show after like 20 odd shows or 30 shows. So I'm doing six more this year, and then that's it. So I'm doing.
And then will you just go off and dream up another new thing?
I love the process. And like some years I'll do a full blown hypnosis show. Other years I'll do like a mixture of magic and mentalism. I'm going to go, like I'll say this much, I'm going to go off the radar next year. I'm not going to do any public shows at all next year.
Are you not?
No.
Well, you'll still be doing other stuff like corporate and company.
Like the majority
whatever.
Of my business now is actually the corporate
world. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Like next week I'm in Portugal. Last week I was in Miami.
Wow.
And that's all dealing with corporations. But like I'm going off the radar next year, because once these six shows are over, so I'm in like Castlebar, I'm in the INEC in Clarny and Wexford. So all the dates are up my website. But once those six shows are done, I'm not doing any public shows next year, because without getting into any trouble with MCD, so I'm not going to mention exactly what's going on, but in January 2026, there's a big show coming.
Okay.
So
say no more.
Do you need support?
Watch this space.
Yeah.
No, great stuff.
And that's why that went on sale this year, but that's why I'm not going to do any shows next year except that one show in January 2020.
Wow, sounds exciting. Looking forward to that.
Yeah,
looking forward
too.
To that. And I imagine it's going to be somewhere big.
Keith,
has there ever been a time when you were doing a show or, you know, a big trick that it just, everything went wrong?
Oh, yeah. Loads of times, actually.
What's the most memorable one for you?
Well, I'll give you two, because one's more recent than the other. I'll give you the worst one. I'll give you three. Like, I can give you loads.
Oh, brilliant. Let's go. I'll give you two,
but then I'm going to give you a real one that I haven't spoken about before that just came into my head.
But it's actually a really
important one.
Right.
Actually, it's kind of important for now, for this. I just thought of that.
Me nerves.
Oh, this is mad. Brilliant. So the world is colliding in my head. So I'll give you one. So one is, I just came from... he's not a physio, he's a movement expert in Glenageary, right? Great guy. Just found him a couple of months ago because my body broke up from two things. A car accident that I was in 2007.
Oh, yeah.
And I was nearly killed in that. But then all the escapes that I'd done over the years. Right. So the one thing that went wrong, but nobody knows it went wrong, was I was hanging upside down outside the RT studios about 2 years ago. Yeah, I know.
Just hanging around.
You didn't even know I was there.
I know. Well, actually, on the first day, they forgot to hire the crane. For the rehearsals.
So that's the budget.
Yeah.
That's totally taking the few quid.
They actually forgot to hire the crane for rehearsals, so I never got a rehearsal. So on the day of filming was the first time I got to do this.
Oh, wow.
So I ended up hanging upside down in a straitjacket. And my twist on that stunt is I had my head wrapped in a whole roll of cling film, so I can't see or breathe, and I'm 150 foot in the air. So now you have got a reason to get out. I was always thinking, right, these guys used to get out of straitjackets. Well, what's the point? Like, what's the point of it? Like big deal. You got out of a straitjacket.
All the times I was in a straitjacket in my life, I've never tried to get out.
Yeah, you sure? I can teach you.
You don't stay over.
So I was upside down, and the reason to get out of it is to get the cling film off, because if not, I'm going to definitely pass out. But not if
to
not
wrap
worse,
your sandwiches in for in the morning.
Yeah. So, but in that one, no one knows this. Even to this day, I don't think anybody knows. I detached the cartilage off my rib cage. So that went wrong, but nobody knew it at the time. And like, it was only about 24 hours later when like my whole system had kind of settled down. I was like, oh, that doesn't feel right. And then for a week, it was like, oh, that really doesn't feel right. And then being that, like let's be honest, like Irishmen are stupid.
Yeah. Right? Yeah,
I was the real hard man about it. I was like, it's grand.
Yeah.
So I never, but years later, they scanned it because it still gives me trouble now. And the ultrasound that
I did. You didn't actually feel instant pain when it happened?
No, because
the adrenaline. Oh, right.
And then, so basically the crux of it is all the cartilage, it knitted itself back on, but in a weird way. And they're like, well, there's no point in operating now, but you're going to have that injury for the rest of your life, and it's going to niggle at you. So that's why I have to keep going to these physios and movement experts. So that's one that comes to mind. Another one that comes to mind was the time that I'm laughing at this. This is the most stupid one I've done.
I love stupid ones, Keith.
No, this is the really stupid one. I froze myself in a ton of ice for 47 minutes.
That's Wim Hof extreme. That is.
So the whole idea of
47 minutes.
Yeah, it was for Brain Hacker. That was the name of the show, actually, at the time. Keep Harry Brainacker on TV3.
Was out, support for
Oh, you did the sport. Yeah. Oh, yes. I'm going to bring it at home, lads. Bring it home. So you remember, right? I don't know if you're on that particular one, but...
No, I wasn't.
So the whole idea was I got frozen in this ton of ice, and the reason to do that was to bring my vital signs down enough. And the whole idea behind the theme behind that particular episode was kind of the afterlife. So the whole idea was to bring them my vital signs enough that I could potentially push myself to go to the other side and bring back messages to all the people in the audience. And I put in a disclaimer that I don't believe in psychics and that what I was doing was for entertainment purposes, that I wasn't really talking to the dead.
Yeah.
And I explained I was actually hacking their brains and figuring out who the dead people were by hacking their brains. But for the show, I was going to bring my vital signs down for real, using ice, and then hack their brains and bring back messages from the afterlife. That was kind of right. the theme. So I did it. And again, I had rehearsed it, but I'd only been in the ice out in the Ardmore Studios or somewhere. But I'd only been in the ice for like 5 minutes. I was like, yeah, okay, we'll do this for about 20 minutes on the night. But I don't know what happened. But the production team left me in there for 47 minutes, right? Because I can't time it, right? And then I went into shock. And we kind of knew I'd go into shock, right? That was fine. And they took me out. And interestingly, as a side note, they dropped me. You can see it on whoever's up the top end dropped me. So my shoulder cracked off the gurney, right? Nearly broke my shoulder. Then they carried me backstage anyway. And they had like doctors and nurses and all the rest there. And they're like, yeah, he's not well. And I'm like this, right?
Fucking
I'm like this. Man. So I'm in mild hypothermia and like all the rest of it. So anyway, I kind of came to and they measured my and it was actually okay. So at the end, like after a couple of hours, and I went home. And when I went home, that night I woke up in the middle of the night and I just started puking, right? And this is the part no one knows, and this is absolutely gospel truth, right? Started puking, but then it started coming out the other end as well. So both ways, right? But then that would happen like
that'd
every day.
That'd have been some finale for the show, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, it happened to me.
That would have melted the ice.
Where'd you see this?
Well, weirdly, that kind of happened to me one night on stage in the Olympia. But that's a whole other story. but so the mad thing is that kept going. And again, I was like, oh, I don't want to go to the doctor, but this is so stupid. Yeah. What do I say to the doctor? And anyway, eventually I went to the doctor. I was getting really worried because this wasn't stopping. Like, and
I say that when you pull up to the doctor's going, fuck, I can't wait to hear this.
Oh, yeah.
He went to the doctor and guess what he told him?
What?
Guess what he told him?
All right.
So anyway, they took me bloods. And I remember it was Christmas Eve that year. The blood tests came back and they were all fine. And then the doctor rang me and said, listen, here's what I think. I think because you're in there for so long, your kidneys had shut down and your kidneys can recuperate because I was lying on ice the whole time. So regardless of being buried in the ice. I was lying directly on like ice blocks. And so my kidneys, he reckons, had shut down, but they recuperated by the time he'd taken the bloods and that was fine. But the time of the Olympia, actually, so this will be like, this is the time something went wrong. And then I'll tell you the one that no one knows. I was on stage in the Olympia one night and I went to a place around the corner for dinner and it was a rookie mistake, right? I'd had mussels, right?
Oh,
you can see where this is going.
You can see where this is going.
So I'd had mussels for my dinner and I went in and I was on stage and I was thinking, jeez, I don't feel very well here now and I'm giving it all loads, right? But I'm only about 15 minutes in. I was like, sorry, just give a second there, and I just ran off. Right, and I go back on, and everyone's kind of like wondering what's going on. I was like, I felt a bit sick there, I'm just getting a bit sick, and then I just go on with the show. But this went on the whole way through the night. I kept running off and puking, and running back on, running off, and I was puke, and I was really retching, right? And the gas thing is, in my shows, it might be the same. When you tell me, I don't know if it's the same with comedy shows. No matter what happens on the stage, everyone just thinks it's part of the show.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a good thing necessarily when you've got food poison, right? So I was off and back. And then at half time, I was up and I was getting sick. And then I came. So at the end of the show, I'd gotten sick so much that it was on my shoes, it was on my jeans and everything. And I was at the side of the stage again. Getting sick, and I just said to Jose, who's worked for me for 20 years, but this is a good few years ago. I said, Jose, run to the dressing room, just get us a change of pants, will you? So I can walk out there. So I changed my pants at the side of the stage, like super fast, right? And I was still talking into the mic when I came on and I said, thank you and good night. And I got a standing on and everything. And I went up and just collapsed. A heap like up in the dressing room, and MCD they had something going on in Marley Park that night, so they called the shock doc in Marley Park, like the doctor supposed to be there for all the festival goers to get to me in the Olympia. Jeez. And she had to give me two shots, one in each cheek, to just get me moving. But like, I had to lie down in the Olympia for like 2 hours.
That's just bad fuel poison.
Yeah, like,
I like all the really when you're saying bits of puke, and you're saying to people in the audience, we're going, look at the muscles on him.
Hey, that's yourself. You can have that. There's the cut down.
Yeah, you can use that one.
Tell us the next one.
Okay, the one that no one knows. And actually, I can I don't know if I'll find it, because you know, do you ever try and look for stuff on your phone? And even if you have it under your favorites, you just never find it anymore.
Oh, never.
But I have it on my phone. If I can find it, I'll show it to you afterwards. So I was working on Now You See Me 2, right? So the Now You See Me movies.
Sorry, can I just, before you, that's Now You See Me. Do you remember them films, Woody Harrelson and all? Yeah. 1 and 2, The Illusionists.
Yeah.
Kate was the bleeding magic consultant for those films.
Yeah, so I worked on number 1 and number 2. And number 2, I worked on the script from Day Zero with Ed Solomon as the writer. So I was writing directly into the script and everything. It was mad, like, you know. And then I was on set in Longcross Studios in London for 3 months with all the crew.
Wow.
So I lived in London for 3 months while all that was happening. So, but for the premiere in New York, right? God, this drives me mad to even tell this. So they flew me and the missus out for the premiere in New York, and it was all brilliant, right? Because they treated me, to be honest, like, there's the four horsemen in the movie, which are the main actors. Like Woody Harrelson and Mark Ruffalo. But they treated me like the fifth horseman. It was amazing, like, you know.
And you're good mates with Woody, aren't you?
Yeah. Woody gets back to me now faster. You know the way you text a mate, you get back to you 3 days. But Woody gets back to you within a couple of minutes, like, you know?
Brilliant.
But anyway, they flew me out, and I had to do a press junket. So the missus went off to a spa or something, and I did 55 interviews in, like, you know these press junkets where you sit down and do 15
minutes.
So I did 55 of them
like
that
day. Like a conveyor belt in.
And you can find loads of those up on my YouTube channel. And anyway, I was doing those press junkets. And then that night, there was kind of two dinners going to happen. One was to with partners, and then one was just the closed down kind of crew, whatever. So that was the early one. So I was going to both. So I went to the early one. So that's just the closed down crew. So it was basically me, Dave Franco, Woody Harrelson, Mark Ruffalo, the vice president of Lionsgate worldwide, Bobby Cohen, Lizzie Kaplan, or no, was it Lizzie? Yeah, it was Lizzie Kaplan, and or was Isla Fisher? No, it was Lizzie Kaplan. She was in number 2. So Lizzie Kaplan, and I think that could have been it. There might have been, Jesse Eisenberg was there as well.
Yeah,
So basically the whole crew, right. And just, but very like closed in, and there was about, in total, there's about 10 people there. So I'm wrecked, jet lagged, and I don't mind saying slightly hungover from the night before as well, right? So I'm sitting there, and I just, like, they know me so well, like, I'm kind of half expecting them to say, do something, Keith, right? But, like, they know me so well, half the time they don't bother anymore. So, like, I'm just sitting there hanging out just as mates, right? And Mark Ruffalo's wife was there, right? So she was the one kind of cogging the wheel. She was supposed to come to the other dinner, right? But she was there, so fine. And he goes, Keith, will you do something? Because my wife is here. I went, yeah. Have you got something new? And because of them, right, I always have to have something new. But people don't realise. It's like a joke. You don't know if it's going to fall flat or not, right? So, but I'm really tired. And I developed a whole load of new stuff. But I hadn't really rehearsed it because you can't, don't have time. So 55 interviews, I'm exhausted. So I go, okay, here's the thing. Mark, take this deck of cards. So I gave him a deck of cards. Shuffle it. Turn them upside down. Shuffle again. And then I put down this prediction, which was a note on the table, right? Now, bear in mind, these are 10 powerhouse people and everyone's in and they're looking at this. And I go, look, read the prediction. And the prediction says, I predict there will be, after Mark's shuffling, and I hadn't touched the cards, right? I predict after all of Mark's shuffling, there will be exactly 27 face down cards because he'd mixed them face up into face down. Okay, great. So he starts counting. We're all counting with him. They're like, everyone's like, no way. Like, this just can't be. Like, because Keith hasn't touched the cards. There's just no way. So I'm sitting there and. Like,
so it's a deck of 52, is it?
Yeah, it's 52 cards. Yeah. And I'm saying that there's 27 cards face down. Yeah. Not 26, like 27 cards face down. So he's like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And he's putting out the face up cards over there and he's counting the fit and he's like, ah, everyone's like, no way. And he's like, 27. And then he goes, 28, 29, 30, 31. And then they're all like waiting for the curveball.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, well, that didn't work. Right. So if it gets worse. So then I did this thing here that I actually just realized I haven't seen these or done these since. It's so funny they're even taught about this because I swear to God, I wasn't even thinking of that one. So these are ESP cards and they're
ESP cards. Yeah. What did ESP stand for?
So they're just simple shapes and symbols. So the circle, plus sign, wavy lines, square, and a star, right? So these were actually genuinely invented by Dr. Ryan of Duke University many moons ago to test people for psychic ability. That's what they're used for, right? So I thought, look, I'll try something with these. And at the time, I developed something up. And again, I was doing it on, I think it was Bobby Cohen. And it could be Mark Ruffalo, whoever it was, anyway. And the whole...
Mark Ruffalo.
There's a whole thing that's supposed to happen with them. And basically, well, look, let's do it, Willa. Let's do it. And then I'll... Well, see, does it work? Probably this won't work. I haven't done it since then. So
for anyone listening to this, you can watch this on YouTube. So
we've got a set there.
All our podcasts are on YouTube.
Okay. And they're a circle, plus sign, wavy line, square, and a star. So first of all, just give them a mix so they're not in any kind of particular order. Oh, let me drop mine. All right, so
I'm shuffling,
and if people, and if people want to see like what these look like, besides even looking at this, one of the opening scenes of Ghostbusters, the movie, Bill Murray was doing this,
yeah,
and somebody was being electrocuted while it was happening. So we won't do that, obviously. Willa.
No.
So Willa, here's
not
the idea.
Anyway.
We're going to use the tables. Move right into the table. So okay. Willa, I'm going to take one and I'm going to put it down right there, just like
okay.
that, right? So I'm sending you that mentally right now, right? That one there. So whatever one you think that one is, don't even show Eric. You're just going to put whatever you think that one is. You're just going to put it down there. All right. And again, this is just an experiment.
Face up or face down?
Face down, face down, face down. Face down. So okay. Whatever one you think it is, put it face down.
All the way up, so they're kind of facing each other.
Now, is that just a yes, do you think?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I actually think I really sent that to you, and I think you're open and receptive to this.
So let's see what you put down. See, you put down the star, and if you flip this over, I put down the star.
I love it.
We'll go again. We'll go again. Mix them up. And let's not forget the story at the end of this, right? Yeah. We'll mix them up.
Okay.
So I'll put one down. Remember, I go first. And it's important that I go first so that there can be no
tricky. Can you do the lot of
okay, there'll be no tricky. Okay, I'll go again. You can go. And by the way, the star is included. You can use that again or not. I don't care. It's up to you. Okay, so give them a good mix up and then put one down right there. Okay. Now, do you want to change or do you want to stick with that one?
I'm going to stick
with it. Okay, so let's go with, I'm going to send this one to you next. Okay, I'm staring at it. Okay, I'll even show, well, I won't show it to you. Okay, I'm going to put it down there. Whatever one you think that one is, you put it down next. Okay, just put it on top, yeah. Okay, now do you want to change? Are you happy with that one there? Well, you look like you might want to change. You want to change?
No, I don't want to change.
you thought about it for a second. You don't want to change? Okay.
No.
You're still considering change.
Stick
okay, I'll put this one down next. Okay, now, whatever your next one is, whatever you think that one is, you put it down. Okay, again, I ask you every time, do you want to change?
Yeah.
Do you want to change?
Yeah.
You do want to change?
Yeah.
Okay. Take it back and change. Just so we're fair about this. Okay. Now, you can change back if you want to change back. No?
Yeah. No.
Okay. So I'm putting this, I'm sending it, and I'm genuinely sending this to you, okay? So I put that one down. Whatever you think that one is, you put it down, and then we've one each left. You're not sure of this last one.
I'm usually excited.
Now, here's the interesting thing. If we've done this correctly, the one in our hands should be the same, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, on the count of three, we flip them over and we'll show them the camera. One, two, three, go. Square. We've got the square and a square. So pick up your pile.
Hang on. Pick up your pile
and take off the top card. Take off the top card. Okay, flip it over. Star. And then the next one. Circle. And next one. Wavy lines. And the next one.
Fuck off! Get the fuck out of here! Oh my God.
That's brilliant, man.
That's freaky shit.
That's fucking great.
But here's the mad thing. So I did this on, I think it was Mark Ruffalo. And we flipped them over and they were all wrong. Right.
Wait, come here. Listen, we tapped into the whole other roles that you do, like as in like sometimes you've been used for investigations, sometimes you've been used for mortgage advice or whatever. But is there any other kind of discipline out there within the realms of the magic sphere that you'd be interested in getting into? Or is there, have you done everything now at this stage, do you think?
Look, you've never done everything. There's so much to explore. Like I love exploring just anything to do with the human mind. I mean, do you know what I've gone mad into now, which is related to what I do? Biohacking. So biohacking is the whole concept. There's a lot of
people make called bio, haven't you?
Yeah, I have, yeah. You're some bio.
You really are bio.
So biohacking is this, it's kind of a generational thing, but it's new, where there's all these people out there who are biohackers. There's a guy out there that a lot of people will be familiar with, Brian, I think it's Johnson, Cranston maybe. Anyway, he's the guy who basically says he wants to live forever, right? So he's living his life by an algorithm, and he's spending about he's a multimillionaire, he's spending $1 million a year on all these different supplements and red light therapy and the whole concept that he's saying, whether it's true or not, that he's biologically something like 15 years younger than his actual age. There's another guy, the forefather of this, Dave Asprey, I think is his name. So Dave Asprey, he's online and he's a proponent of this. And the whole idea is like everything from, you know, blue light blockers before you go to bed with the screens down to taking various supplements and this and that. But I'm really intrigued by that whole area. Like, I'm undecided on any of it because there's so much charlatanism out there now, right? Mm. So everyone's trying to sell something, right? Mm. I suppose the person at the forefront of this, you might have heard of him, Gary Brecka. Have you heard of Gary Brecka? So Gary Brecka is at the forefront of it right now, right? So he's the person that most people watching this would be familiar with. But I was out in Miami, as I said, last week, and I know his clinic is based in Miami. So I thought, Jesus, I might go down and have a visit down here. So Gary Brecka is out there mainly because of Dana White in the UFC. So yeah. Dana White has reversed his age. He's lost loads of weight and he puts it all down to Gary Brecka, right?
Right.
So there's a test you can take called a methylation test.
Sorry for cutting across you. Does Gary Brecka know who you are before you go down to the practice?
No, not at all.
So he hasn't got a clue who you are?
No idea. And there's a thing that you can take which is called a genetic methylation test, which according to Gary Brecka, we should all take. And it shows that genetically, whether you're deficient in, for example, you might be deficient in calcium, but because your body can't process calcium a certain way, and there'll be a protocol for that, rather than going to your doctor and your doctor saying, take calcium tablets. So there's a whole protocol behind this.
Oh, I know I know the test. It's like fellas that go to the gym and think, oh, I'll eat chicken and fish all the time and that's how I'll lose weight, when realistically it's beef.
Exactly. So we're all different. So anyway, I looked it up, but the gas thing is he's out there on Instagram and everyone's following him. And when you look up the reviews on his place in Miami, it all falls down. I was going to go, but the stacks of cards come down. It's like, you know, this is the worst test in history. You get no accurate results. They just try and sell you all the pills. So that's what I'm saying. There's a lot of snake oil stuff out there. But there is something to be said for certain elements of it. So for example, I practice cold therapy a lot. Science is solid. I'm in ice baths every day. And now the new thing that will come out pretty shortly, the fad that'll happen online will be contrast therapy, which is using a sauna and an ice bath in conjunction with each other, because that's where the solid science is.
It's been done at the minute. There's loads of places doing it, isn't it?
Yeah, but the reason they're doing it is because the longevity studies that have been done, like you know the way everyone's saying, go on the carnivore diet, but then everyone else is saying, go on the vegan diet. Yeah, right? I say to people, go on the diet that suits you, you know what I mean? But the thing about it is, the longevity studies, and this is about biohacking and stuff, two things I've really looked at and gone, right, that's it, to start with, just as the foundation, right? One is ikigai. So ikigai is basically your purpose. And they found that people who retire, they end up getting sick and lonely and sad and depressed and dying earlier than people who've got a purpose. So they never really retire. So the Japanese are living longer than most people because
they work longer.
They work in the community.
Yeah.
They garden and then they take the food and they give it to charity and stuff, and they've got their purpose. So there's a lot to be said for that, like a huge amount. And then the other thing is the scientific benefits behind cold therapy and then contrast therapy. And that's because like the Danish and the Swedish in Europe are living the longest. And regardless of what you eat or drink, this is the good news for people.
Yeah.
Regardless of what you eat or drink.
People should go about the Mediterranean diet all the time. Yeah. And it's bullshit.
Yeah, well, it's not bullshit, but like, you know, olive oil and all that is all good for you. But like, if you want to stack things, the best thing you can do is cold therapy, and even better than that, contrast therapy, because the studies are there. They're solid studies now. You know what I mean? But that's the area that's really... and then I just want to do stuff that I like. Yeah. So I'm going back to magic again.
Yeah.
Like for the crack. Like just for down the pub. Like it's just magic tricks for the sake of it, right?
Yeah.
And then I want to learn the harmonica.
Okay. Like,
so just mad stuff like that.
Brilliant.
Like, nothing to do with what I actually do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I haven't started to learn the harmonica.
I'd like to see your new show.
And you know what I want to learn? I want to learn how to play the ukulele.
Yeah.
And I'm sure
because I love George Formby.
Yeah.
Not George Foreman.
Boy, I'm Andy Dutchman.
Yeah. No, it's
now I go window cleaning to earn an honest bob. Did I hear that you in the... I'll tell you one thing, Eric, it's an interesting job.
George Formby, is it?
Yeah.
I've seen him. I have seen
I'm
him on TV.
But there's
you need to look up a mate of mine, Johnny Archer. He's an amazing comedian and magician of the UK, but he plays the ukulele as part of his act as well. So,
but there's a big group of people that like, they do all REM songs and all.
Mm.
There's a gang of them. They meet every week in a pub in town. So there's like about 40 of them, and they all play ukuleles, you know. That's me in the corner. No, what are they called?
They're always in the Stag's Head.
That's them, yeah.
Before the crunch.
Yeah.
Yeah, you love clubs. You'd be like into Ballymun Adventurers and stuff like that.
We've got the Ballymun Explorers, and then there's a men's group.
See, I knew that.
There's a men's group as well that I hike with as well, that's actually going out on Sunday. This will be out after that one. They went out last Sunday, I should say.
Yeah.
But the command, it's the outdoors now. People are trying to get away from phones and get away from sitting there and watching the telly. And like yourself, I love the stuff that you're doing with the ice bath out the back and all that. I mean, because it is. And people go, I can't do it. And it was like me a few years ago. My mate done a podcast in his van, and he said, in order to do the podcast in the van, we have to get in the sea.
Yeah.
And my nephew has been an avid sea swimmer for years, like I'm going back probably 15, 16 years. Yeah. You can remember the bad snow in 2010.
Yeah.
And the reason I don't forget it is because my sister passed away that year, but my nephew has got photographs of being out in Port Marnock in the snow.
In the water.
So he's been at it for years and years.
I was in Collymore Harbour today. Like, I was in Collymore Harbour and went to swim today. Yeah. Because the guy I go to is in Glenageary. So I go for a swim first.
Brilliant.
But here's the gas thing. During COVID, right, when you went there, it doesn't matter what day it was.
Isn't Collymore Harbour beautiful?
That's my favourite place.
When I inspect scaffolds, and when we had a job down at Collymore Harbour, and I've got some amazing photographs on my phone from early morning. Yeah. And a couple of mornings I went, my boss will know now. I brought me towel with me and me togs and get in and have a dip.
Yeah. But here's the thing down there, during COVID, right, it was a fad. Everyone and their granny was down there swimming.
Yeah.
And morning, noon and night. And I can accept that a lot of people have gone back to work, but I go there at all kinds of different times during the week. It's brilliant. Right. They're all gone. It was a fad. They're all gone. They're not sea swimming or dipping anymore. Yeah. And I go there all year round. But like that, it was like this year I was there.
I must meet you down there for
a long time. Yeah,
loved it.
Well, so I learned this the hard way in Collymore Harbour. So about two Christmases ago, not that long ago, I was there. And I was in, and the lads got in and out real quick because the water temperatures, whatever the lowest it goes down, probably six degrees.
Yeah, something like that,
5-6 degrees.
Three Adam's apples.
So I was in there, right? And the lads all get out, and I was like, this isn't too bad. And I float around, and like, you know, you're kind of getting used to it, you know? And I was like, this isn't too bad. And I was probably in there for like 15 minutes or something. And I got out, right? And I tried to put on my clothes, and I couldn't. I'd lost all feeling in my hands.
Yeah.
And like, again, I think it was mildly hypothermic. My dad, or my friend's 80-year-old dad, put on my socks for me. Like, come on, right? So I learned, though, somebody told me after that, and it's actually a great rule for anybody out there, even coming into the summer, you have to be careful.
Imagine people looking at that guy, look at Keith Barry after hypnotising that outfit to put his socks on.
Yeah. I'm sure he recorded it. You're not wrong. So a minute per degree is the rule.
Okay, right.
So the water temperature now is probably, I don't know, 8-9 degrees, something like that. So you shouldn't stay in longer than like 7-8 minutes.
Wow, well, okay, I knew that. So you see, what I do, because I get in all year round, is that when it starts dropping, I wear the gloves and I wear the boots. Yeah. That's what I do.
Helps,
and come here, I still get in my shorts and that, but I insulate my hands and I insulate my feet.
Does it help?
Yeah, it really does help.
Are you waterproof?
No, they're not waterproof, but it's kind of like a wetsuit. It's that when the water gets in, it kind of absorbs the heat, it holds the heat in it, and your feet don't be as cold as what they really should be. It's kind of like a towel for your hands and your feet when you're in the water. But now, mind you, it's changing now, so I'll get rid of the boots and get rid of the gloves and just get in as I am.
Great. But like I always just say to people, find something. It doesn't have to be sea swimming or ice dipping.
No.
But there's such a wave of, you could go down a rabbit hole, but mental health and all the rest of it. And like I see it with kids now, like, because I get any amount of emails through the website about people who are struggling, you know. And look, I can't see people one-to-one at the moment. I'm just too busy. So I defer them on to other people. But here's my point. I always say to people, you have to take a step back for a moment and find something to help yourself to start with. And of course, you need to reach out to people. But it's like what you said. Too many people are now saying, I can't do that. Well, why not?
You can do what you want.
Of course you can. But it doesn't have to be sea swimming. It could be just like literally walk outside in your back garden now that the weather's good with a cup of coffee in the morning instead of having it in the kitchen, and don't turn on your phone for 5 minutes and just listen to the birds.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I mean? It doesn't have to be complicated.
I remember one day sitting in the house and I was looking out the patio door at the back and it was lashing. Now, you know that real heavy thing? And something just went, go out and stand in the middle of the garden.
Yeah.
And I just opened the door and I walked out.
Yeah.
And I felt like a man off Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, in literally a minute, I was after being thrown into a tank of water.
But it can be very cathartic, that stuff.
Unbelievable.
And I do lots of different things. But like, I went over to a Wim Hof seminar there earlier this year. You know Wim Hof?
Yeah.
So I went over to him over to Stroh, an hour north of Amsterdam. And I've been practicing the Wim Hof method for, again, before he was really popular online. So about 10 years.
How long can you hold your breath for?
So this is a good question. My longest has been 3 minutes, 45 seconds. Now that's on an exhale with no oxygen in my lungs, by the way.
So it takes to another new meaning when someone says to you, look at Keith, don't hold your breath.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like, 3 minutes, 45
yeah,
seconds.
Yeah, and interestingly, like the world record is up about 20 minutes, but people don't realise that when those world records, they breathe pure oxygen from a tank for about like 2 hours before they do that breath hold. So a natural breath hold, I don't know what the natural breath hold world record is, but for me, like 3 minutes, 45 seconds has been, I can handily do it now, like just right now I could do it for 2.5 minutes.
Wow.
But with the Wim Hof thing, because I've been practicing so long, I went over and I was doing the breathing, and there was about 60 people there, and people have all kinds of different reactions now because it does dump DMT naturally into your system, right? So you can hallucinate everything on it, and people can have epileptic fits, or seizures at least, maybe not epileptic fits, but seizures that may look like epileptic fits. So there's all kinds of madness going on at this now. It's wild, there's people kind of screaming and everything, and I was just there just enjoying it because I've done it for so long, and I wasn't there for any other reason except it was just interest. Like, I didn't have any mental health problems that I was dealing with around. I was just there. And then I sat up, and I'm not ashamed to say, I just started bawling my eyes out for no reason, right?
Your emotions just...
But then I couldn't stop. But there was kind of happy tears. But then there was people coming over and hugging me, going, are you okay?
Yeah.
And then I just kept crying and crying. And it was pretty wild, but it's very cathartic, that kind of experience. So I always say to people, breath work is free. Cold therapy is free. Yeah. Walking in the woods is free.
Is free.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? And I actually felt amazing after it. Like, I've been 3 times to Wim Hof.
I think that stuff like that, because I am very in touch with my emotions. Mm. It's like, I think when people like that cry, that don't cry, that it's just an emotional blockage that has been there for years. That you just, blokes go, that masculine thing of man up and big boys don't cry and all that. I don't buy into that shit. I watch The Secret Millionaire, man. When he's giving out the money, I'm fucking crying my eyes out. Yeah. Like, when he's walking into the venues and going to the dinner woman, there's £3,000 to help with, the kids' meals or whatever.
I'd love to do an alternative to that show and be this secret homeless person just going into places and all that, and then at the end going, all that money I promised you.
Yeah.
I'm actually homeless.
Now, all that money you were saying, I'm going to be staying in your garbage. I think it's good, and I think it's great that a lot of men are starting to talk to each other now, and they're starting to talk about their feelings and talk about stuff. Because, years ago when my father was growing up, I'd say, your own father and Eric's father, you sat on the bar stool and you had a few drinks and you didn't talk about your feelings. You didn't talk about your emotions. It was unspoken, people didn't talk about that.
I think it's a generational thing as well. I think it's better now than it was, but then I think the kids now are struggling more than we ever did because it is the phones.
Yeah,
it was
it's
digitalization. I'm convinced of it.
Yeah, but my father's generation, I don't remember any of my dad's mates going to the gym or going hill walking, or there was none of that. There was literally nothing at all. You were just a dad and that was it.
Indoor
football. Involved.
That's what I remember my dad playing. Indoor football once a week, but that was it. There was nothing
else besides
that. And
is your dad still here?
He is, yeah.
He is.
My dad was into swimming. That was his. No, my dad was into swimming because you mentioned Collymore Harbour, that would have been his local. My dad's from Doggy.
Okay, yeah.
But he's deaf, so he doesn't even know he's posh. Jeez. People have heard that before.
you come from good stock then.
I know,
A few quid and all.
How many was in your dad's family?
My dad had 7 brothers, 7 sisters.
Wow.
So my dad is from the second marriage.
Right.
So my nanny married the man at the first marriage, and then he died after.
It's unheard of out in Killiney.
She had 5 kids, and then she married my dad's dad, and they had 10 kids, so the woman was just constantly pregnant.
My dad's mother was pregnant for 16 years on the trot.
That was an awfully big baby.
She'd 16 kids, all one after the other.
I have two and I can barely handle it.
And they'd nothing, they literally nothing going on. My dad came from a tenement block of flats right beside the Brazen Head pub, and it's an old gag hotel. My dad said were that poor that if you didn't wake up on Christmas morning with an erection, you had nothing to play with.
Oh, when you used to knock on the door looking for the rent?
Yeah, come on in, we'll all look for it. That's what my dad say. Yeah, the rent man is knocking the door and say, "I'm here looking for the rent." And my granddad roared out, "Come on in, we'll all look for it."
I kind of miss those days. Like when I was growing up, it was a BMX bicycle and it was the boxer dog, and that was it.
Do you know what? My two favorite BMX bikes from back in the day would have been a Harrow Freestyler, and I was actually looking at them last night. They make a gravel bike.
Oh yeah.
So I'm on the look for a gravel bike. If Trek Ireland or someone is listening.
What's a sponsor?
Sponsors. I have a nice road bike at the moment that's worth a few grand, and it's my road bike. Yeah. I bought it but I'm looking to change. So I'm looking to get rid of the road bike and get a gravel bike. I've got a mate of mine, Norman Sherlock, who's a really avid cyclist, and he goes all over the world. He's just literally come back from doing a race, 19 hours he was doing it for. Wow. It's called a Teke, is the name of it.
TEKA.
And I mean, like, it's unbelievable. And is Wahoo letting down the sat nav for the bike and all that. And it was just a disaster. But 19 hours he was
Cycling in the National Park in Killarney about 4 weeks ago. My arse is still sore after half an hour. Imagine what he's like after 19 hours.
Look at famous porn star, 19 hours in the saddle.
Wow.
That's serious, like.
I want to throw out something before we finish up, lads, because would you believe we're running out of time? I was telling you, Will, before we came in here, I've started this 6-week body transformation with Philly McMahon.
He's going to be a woman gym when he finishes.
He's great. I know Philly. I don't know him well, but he's going
to have a big chest. It's a body transformation.
But we're doing all the training, and then obviously we got the supplements, and we have the nutrients, the nutrition plan, and all that.
What supplements are you on? Come on now.
I'll show you. I know I have to have them with me, but I'll tell you when we're finished here. I'll show you on my phone. They're all photographed as well.
He's on the juice.
I just can't remember them. But one of the things was, like, you know, the carbs is half a cup of brown rice, right? Yeah. Half a cup. Did you know that was an actual measurement? A cup is a measurement.
Well, a lot of them say, like, it depends who you go to. A lot of them say a fistful or, you know, the size of your fist or whatever.
But I didn't know. Like, when he said a cup, I just went, all right, sound. So what I was doing was I was getting a cup, an actual fucking cup, and filling it up half with rice and then throwing it into the pot and boiling and going, fucking loads of rice there. And I was going, this is the handiest diet I've ever fucking been on. I'm leaving full. A cup is a cup. When I went out, I googled it anyway, right? And a half a cup of brown rice is only 87 grams. I was lashing 400 grams into my dinner every day. And here I was, I'm doing it about 10 days now, and I've lost half a kilo. I was going, fuck's sake, that'll be better than that.
So what size is the cup, Philly? Is he drinking out of a fucking egg cup or something?
But you see, it's called a cup. It's not an actual cup. It's called a cup.
That's like calling that a bucket.
I know,
it's a fucking table.
Yeah, it's bullshit. Yeah. And you need to. So PT's out there, you need to make that clear to the innocent slob.
Philly, what's he doing eating rice anyway? He shouldn't be eating rice. He should be getting all his carbs.
Do you know what? I've got terrible discipline. My mate Norman coming back to it again. Yeah. So I'm going to show him after. But Norman used to be a big fella.
Yeah.
And then he went on to this diet. It's called the cabbage water diet.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So he sent me the yolk and he went, you're guaranteed to lose like 10 kilos on this in whatever, 7 days or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I said, now Norman is very, very disciplined and he done it for 2 weeks and he lost a shitload of weight. But then he continued it and he started eating really healthy and all that. So I got it. And I think I lasted a day and a half. I swear to God, was all in the fridge. Water? No, it's not cabbage water. I'll get the diet for you. So it is cabbage water, but there's other stuff in it like... come here, it's fucking ridiculous. Like.
Actually, here, like, a complete side note. Look at me and think back to your very first crush or kiss, right? Okay, now look at me. I know this is just a complete sideline. Now, here, be honest, like, in front of the camera and Willa, like, did you tell me or Willa or the producers the name of this first crush or first kiss off air?
Absolutely not.
Okay, good. So this is real. So look at me. I want you to just imagine in your head, you're thinking back to that moment, this person, whoever, I'm assuming it's a lady, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so look at me. Imagine back to... Interesting. I'm thinking for a moment, just it's subconsciously, not consciously. I know at the front of your head, you have a conscious person, but subconsciously, I went to like Debbie Gibson and Tiffany were in there somewhere as well. Does that make sense?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it wasn't either one of those, but it was a singer of some kind. So in your head, you prefer them slightly older than Debbie Gibson or Tiffany. Look at me, I'm sensing not blonde hair, not brown hair, specifically kind of longer, brownie, but kind of reddish brown. And look at me, and I'm going to go with, look at me, just imagine that I'm her. Don't say it, just think it, just say it in your head, not out loud, say it in your head over and over and over again. Oh, I got one song, but it's not that song. Oh, I got Belinda Carlisle?
Yeah.
Was it?
Yes.
Yeah, that was his first crush.
Circle in the Sand.
Circle.
That was the song. Heaven is a place on earth.
No way.
My God.
No way. I thought it was my ex motto and thank Jesus. I'm down in that lawn now.
That's fucking mad, Keith. Like, that's, I can't even explain. How would he know that? Like, seriously.
How can he do that? Like, how can he do loads of shit?
You always think there's some sort of scam, don't you? There's hidden cameras or something, or somebody's in his ear going,
hidden cameras in your studio. I just went,
yeah. Implant
that I've never been in before. Last night, Keith, with a hood up.
Do you know what I'm only at the notice in as well? Because me and my missus are always sending each other these memes, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And come here, some of the stuff. Do you know what? It's ridiculous. But the other day, I sent her a thing and it was a fella and he was on about 20 different instruments, now playing all different stuff. And I said, this is the inside of my head.
Yes.
So that's like what the inside of my head is be sometimes. Like, there's no music, but it's just organized. It's organized chaos.
Keith Barty, it's been an absolute education, a privilege and an honour to have you on our podcast. Well,
thanks for having me.
100%. And come here, we love you. We think you're amazing and we're delighted that you've come along.
No, thanks for having me.
Blown away by even this. I've seen you do it before, but...
Stories.
No, none of them this week. None of them this week, because we knew we'd have plenty to talk about.
And mind games, though. Don't forget.
Mind games.
Okay, let us know.
KeithBarty.com, isn't it? KeithBarty.com. That's the website.
All the dates are there.
I was on it today, and there's about six dates on it. INEC Glen Eagles is one of them. And then
Wexford Spiegel Tent.
The Spiegel
Castle
Tent.
Bar, that's the one I've seen, Castle Bar, the Royal TF.
Yeah.
And there's a few others there as well.
So go and see Mind Games with Keith Barty and be part of the Mind Games.
Thanks for not asking me anything that would embarrass me in front of me mam as well.
Yeah, yeah. And come here. No, I think it's come here. I'm just to say to people that are listening, go and see the show. You've only got six opportunities to see him, and then you won't see him again
until 2026.
Because he's taking a year now.
That's it. Yeah,
and then there's something big coming.
Yeah.
But for now, get your dose of Keith Barty from Mind Games. Go to his website. 6 gigs. Buy a ticket.
Get your hands on me.
Get your hands on me. Thanks very much.
Thanks, lads. Thanks.